I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history. Not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. If you're not a big gamer, if your gaming is more like, Mario 3 for regular Nintendo, maybe Candy Crush on the bus, I need to tell you about Fallout. Because Fallout is one of the most successful video game franchises ever. And it's all because of a really simple concept. The video game series Fallout is about what happens after a nuclear holocaust. Like, if you survived, how did you do it? What does life look like for you now and for the people all around you? How do you rebuild society? That idea has been explored in about a dozen games. I mean, starting out on PC and then going to Xbox and PlayStation. And given the success of video game adaptations like Halo and The Last of Us, now Fallout is a TV show from Amazon Prime starring Kyle MacLachlan. Now, there's a few ways you might know Kyle. For one, he starred in David Lynch's surrealist network series Twin Peaks, as well as a bunch of other David Lynch's films. He was in Sex and the City as and I had to crowdsource the description from the Q staff for this one. He played Charlotte's loving but intimacy-challenged husband, Trey, in Sex and the City. And he doesn't talk about this too much, but you know the movie Dune, like the big blockbuster that's like currently the biggest movie in the world right now? Well, the first time around that it got adapted in the 80s, he played the lead role. And it didn't go too well. We actually talk a little bit about that, which you don't hear Kyle do too often. A really interesting conversation with a really interesting actor. Fallout is out now. Here's my conversation with Kyle MacLachlan. I loved the show, Kyle.
I'm so happy to hear that you do. I liked it. But, you know, there's and I know that you're a fan, too, and have played Fallout. But it's the fans that were really, you know, wondering how they're going to receive this. But it sounds like from what you said earlier, that this is actually working for you.
I feel like video game fans have a different sort of pressure around them. You know, I was talking to Pablo Schreiber. He was the he plays the Master Chief in the Halo video game adaptation. Yeah. And he said something to me like, the pressure you get from an adaptation of a video game feels different than the pressure you get from the adaptation of a comic book or a novel or something. Do you know?
Yeah, well, the fans are intense. You know, they love the games. And I think we feel the pressure to create something that they're going to respond to, that they're going to like, that they're going to get into, you know. And they're, as they should be, highly critical. This is the games are very special to them. So we want to honor those. And hopefully we've done justice to it.
Did you play them?
I started. I got into a little bit, and I just was like, this is going to take up way too much of my time. It's incredibly immersive and very challenging. So I said, no, I appreciate what it is. I said, I think I'm going to circle around and come back to this.
Where did you do it? At your home? Did you have? I'm trying to imagine you with a game controller in your hand in front of the TV.
Yeah. We have some stuff here. My son is 15, so we got all the gear. But I was just like, holy smoke! So I tried as gracefully as possible back out of the game. Like, okay, all right, I got a sense of what it is. Thank you very much.
Are you a gamer at all?
Not really. This is the thing. I'm inept at that kind of thing. My gaming ended with Defender, when I was a kid in college, and that's about as far as I could go.
The show is very different than, well, it's not very different than the game, but it's a continuation of another story from the game. You play an overseer in a vault, and I'll just explain this for people here. Vaults are the places humanity went to during the nuclear holocaust to survive. Humans lived in vaults and then returned to the surface after the nuclear fallout passed. But, and I hope I'm not spoiling anything here, vaults aren't quite what they seem. You were a kid growing up during the era of nuclear war being imminent to the United States in any minute. Do you remember that feeling?
I mean, I remember having to go under the desk, that kind of drill. But, you know, it wasn't really pervasive in my community or in my home. There were certainly houses that had bomb shelters, fallout shelters around, but few and far between. And, you know, it was just more of a curiosity than anything else. So not a lot of thought or awareness, I think, to what was happening.
There wasn't this sort of pervasive, I'm watching the news and, at any minute, anything could happen.
Not really. We were much more into cartoons and you know, half-hour sitcoms, you know, in the afternoon. That was our – Star Trek was a big a show for our – I have two younger brothers, so we love Star Trek.
Watching Star Trek instead of, you know, being terrified existentially. Did any of this come – did any of these conversations come back about that time or about, like, the way that the world was dealing with the nuclear war back then when you were making the show? Did you talk about it at all?
Not really. I think I was very engaged with the story that we were telling and kind of how that world actually worked, how they imagined it. And very impressed with the thoroughness of the world that was created for the video game, which was very easy. Well, I say easy, but it made a great place to put a story. You could drop a story in on the premise of this idea that the video game was based on, and that's what we did. It's a story of survival, of course, and it's a journey. So and I think the two very important aspects of the game, I would say.
To talk to me more about the sort of underground world that you find yourself living in, and what was interesting to you about it.
My reaction to what the environment that they created, the space that we live in, was pretty. It was an awe because the detail that they went to recreate what we see in the video game was extraordinary. And they also managed to capture, there's a dark humor, gallows humor, I think, that exists in the game, that was very important to the creators to get across. And I think they've done a beautiful job, not only in the casting of people who are funny and know exactly the tone and the line to walk, but also in the writing. We have very clever people working on this. So, you know, if you're going to bring in these people, these are the best people that you want to work with to give you the best shot at creating, I think, the tone of the piece, which is so important.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Kyle MacLachlan coming up.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. I'm speaking to the actor Kyle MacLachlan. We were just talking a little bit about his new role in the TV adaptation of the video game Fallout. So Kyle's first big break was in the film adaptation of the novel Dune, the first one from back in the 80s. And as you may know, if you're a student of film history, didn't go that well. I wanted to ask Kyle about that, given that Dune is such a big successful film now, you know, whether he's seen Timothée Chalamet's portrayal of Paul Atreides. That was the role that Kyle played back in the 80s. But first, I wanted to know what it was like working with the director of Dune and Twin Peaks and Blue Velvet, David Lynch, for the first time. Here's more of our conversation. Was David Lynch intimidating when you first met him?
Not really. No. I mean, I was intimidated before I met him because he's David Lynch. And then I met him and he was just a regular guy, funny because obviously his creative side is different, but he's personable and fun and easygoing, and we had great conversations when we first met. I remember meeting him for Dune. We didn't talk about the movie at all, hardly. We just talked about life and he grew up in the Northwest. I grew up in the Northwest. We had shared experiences. We talked about red wine because we both like, you know, just find it. You find a topic of conversation that you share, and then you just kind of enjoy each other's company. And that's what it was. And at the end of the, it wasn't even a audition. It was a chat. He gave me the script and said, I'd like you to learn these scenes and come back and we'll screen test in about 5 days. And I was like, great. I think I knew enough that a screen test meant something in front of a camera, but I'd never been in front of a camera before. So I learned the scenes and came back and did the test, and off we went.
It must have been a strange thing, Kyle, to be a new actor, to be like you told me, you were sort of a neophyte, sort of brand new. You had done some training, you'd done a little bit of acting, but to be asked to be in not just a David Lynch film, but also an adaptation of this book with tremendous lore around it.
And one of my favorite books, I mean, I was reading the book, I started reading the book when I was 15, and I read it many times. And I think when I auditioned, I was 22 or 23. So, and I was very familiar with the book. It was kind of my go-to happy place, if you know what I mean. When school became a little overwhelming, I needed a sort of a break. I would, you know, I'd read the book. And so then to end up in the running and ultimately getting the role of Paul, it felt very strange to me, but I was not really thinking about how odd it was. I was just like, oh yeah, I got the job. I had had 3 years of acting training. I'd been working in the community Shakespeare festivals and working in Seattle. And so this was, you know, I tried to take it in stride and just, you know, do the audition, do what was asked of me. And I just happened to get the role. In no small part, I think, to the fact that David and I had a great connection, and he saw me as the role of Paul, and it just timing was right. And I'd had enough training that I knew what to do. I just had never been in front of a camera before.
This is kind of uncomfortable to talk about, but and only as much as you want to talk about. The movie isn't, for people who don't know, the movie isn't received warmly.
No, we were crucified. And you know, I'm aware of what's happening and I know what's happening. I'm not as invested in the reception, for whatever reason. And I don't explain. I wasn't sort of sitting there on pins and needles waiting for the reviews to come out. I was just like, we did the movie. I think it's going to be good. Came out. I don't know what's going to happen. It came out. Of course, it was received really poorly. In fact, so bad that the next movie that David and I were going to do together, which was Blue Velvet, which was meant to start shortly after the release of Dune, which was in December of 84. We were supposed to start shooting Blue Velvet in January of 85. Well, it went on hold. It was postponed. And we were, you know, both David and I were kind of at loose ends. You know, we didn't really know what else. I didn't know what else to do. I came to Los Angeles and started auditioning for things and meeting people. But, you know, it was pretty slow. And we didn't get to back to Blue Velvet until, I think, August of that year. So there was a long kind of a dormant period there.
Sounds hard. It sounds challenging.
It was challenging, but I was naive. I think I was young. I had been gone through training and I was like, well, you know, if this doesn't work, I'll just go back to the theater and go the direction I was going in before I did Dune, you know, which was to go to New York and pursue that career there. I didn't really know what to do. So I stayed the course in LA, and tried to figure it out. And with great good fortune, David said, let's go back. We're going to shoot Blue Velvet. And so I was like, great, I have a job. And the Blue Velvet experience was one that was wonderful as well. I mean, gosh, I mean, I really loved working on Dune because it was beyond anything I could have imagined. Of course, working with these extraordinary actors that I'd seen on screen before, but never met. And then with Blue Velvet, it was, you know, it was Isabella Rossellini and Dennis Hopper and Laura Dern. And again, working with David, who I just loved. And it was a pleasure, challenging, but a pleasure. And when Blue Velvet came out, it was also, there was a lot of negative comments about it because it's, you know, it's a pretty tough movie.
Really? Because to me, it's this you know, classic of cinema. You know, when people, I think when people talk to me, when people talk to me about their taste in film, generally, and this is a snobby thing to say, if they say Blue Velvet, typically you go like, oh, okay, let's hang out.
You're okay in my book. We the reviews came out, the first cards came out, people were they didn't know what to say, you know, and they just said this, and they didn't know what to make of it because they'd never seen anything like it before. And it really wasn't until the critic Pauline Kael who wrote a kind of a long, wasn't even a criticism, it was more like an essay really about Blue Velvet, kind of explaining it and the brilliance of it and the meaning of it, that people began to go, oh, wait a minute, you know, oh, I see. You know, there was like this kind of re-understanding of it and what David was trying to do. So she helped tremendously. And then from then on, we gradually made it onto a number of lists, and it's recognized for what it is now, which is a masterpiece, really. And so my great good fortune.
I feel compelled to ask, I'm actually talking to you on the day that the new Dune comes out, Dune 2 comes out.
Yeah.
Given everything that you just told me, have you been able to watch the new Dune, the Denis Villeneuve?
I saw the first one with Timothy, yeah, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I love the story so much. I mean, it's such a great journey. My fear going in was that I was going to see the new Dune and I was going to be, oh, our Dune, you can throw that on the trash heap. And I didn't have that reaction. I said, no, there's room for both of these to exist. The story is so difficult to tell. It's so complex. Everything within that book is linked. So if you don't tell two or three aspects of the story, it weakens the story. You almost need everything in there to really understand it. But I think, you know, David obviously concentrated on the parts of the book and that he responded to, you know, that he really enjoyed. And you're asking a director, an auteur, a creative being to do a movie based on another wonderful writer, Frank Herbert, creative being, you know, so you've got these two very creative energies working together. And David is going to he responds to certain things because that's who he is as an artist. Yeah. And those are the things that are important to him. And he's going to tell those stories in the way that he wants to tell them and visually as well. So it's not just David brought all of his sensibility to Dune. And that is going to change the texture, you know, of that movie, because it is David Lynch, and that's what you hire David Lynch to do.
Yeah.
I
don't have any connection to you. I don't know why this is the feeling that I have, but I just think it's great. I mean, I think it's great that you went in and you watched it. I mean, regardless of how the first Dune was received, I know people I've talked to people who wouldn't want to watch someone else do a part that they once did, you know?
No, yeah, I was curious, and I recognizing the challenges of the role, not really aware of them when I was doing it, but now from a different perspective and knowing, you know, how difficult it is to really create Paul and do Paul. And I watched Timothy do a great job. So I was.
Did you wear a hat so that people wouldn't be watching your reactions the entire time?
Well, I wore my still suit because in case, you know, I didn't know how long the movie was going to be, just in case I needed to, you know, take care of things.
Watching Fallout made us think about how surreal and challenging TV has become sort of mainstream right now in the era of sort of peak TV and streaming TV that we're in right now.
Yeah.
Oftentimes when shows that have become really big in this era, like Yellow Jackets or The Curse or maybe even Fallout, get written about, there's sort of the term, I think pre-1980s, everyone used the term Kafkaesque. Mm-hmm. And now I think since Twin Peaks came out, the shorthand is reminiscent of Twin Peaks or Twin Peaks-ish.
Yes.
What does that mean to you that show that you were in has become a real touchstone?
It's quite amazing, and it has a staying power that. You're not, when you're doing something like that, you're not thinking, oh, I bet this is going to be around in 30 years. You're trying to make a show that works for the moment. But I do know from distance now, when you look at the timeline and you see where Twin Peaks happened in 89, 90, and you look at what was around Twin Peaks at that time on television, and you realize, oh no, this was anarchy on television. This was something that was very unusual, very unexpected.
On network TV, not on like subscriber TV. This was on like after, what was, do you know what was on before Twin Peaks?
Oh man, I don't
even
know.
It was like Home Improvement. I don't know. Like, but it must have been.
Oh, that's a good guess. Something like that. Yeah. But yeah, it was in the world of Roseanne and Home Improvement and LA Law. You know, these shows are great shows. You know what I mean? But nothing at all like what people were seeing with Twin Peaks. And it just blew people's minds wide open. I mean, it's the idea that you have David Lynch, who people have called the premier American surrealist filmmaker, putting something on television doing it as a film director, you know, because the look of it was different. And this is no one had done what David did. There are no filmmakers working on television, you know, bringing their aesthetic to the small screen.
Right. That's so common now to have filmmakers.
And now the back and forth. And for many years, you know, people would talk about, oh, you know, look what they do in England. You know, the actors and people, they work on television, then they work on film, and then they work on stage. They do all three, and it's all accepted. It's all wonderful. And in America, it's like, well, if you're a TV star, yeah, you're fine, but you're not a movie star, And so I think that attitude has certainly softened, and people are, you know, there's crossovers everywhere to the betterment of the viewing audience. I think we get a chance to see some incredible stuff. And, you know, I look back on that as kind of a touchstone, and much of my later employment was actually sort of related to Twin Peaks in one way or another, either the creators of a new, you know, Desperate Housewives, you know, Mark Cherry really, really liked Twin Peaks, you know, it was something that he found inspiration in that. It's like, oh, maybe I can do what I'm imagining on television, you know? So, It did sort of generate a movement, I think, in a way, of much more creative television.
Can you settle a bet in the office?
I'm happy to.
Do you?
Let me get my dice.
I love how you have them on you.
Oh yeah,
that says more about you than anything else.
damn it! I gave it away.
Do you get recognized in the street more for Sex and the City or more for Twin Peaks?
Twin Peaks, I think, still is, but I mean, I look different now. I mean, my hair is white, and you know, I still resemble the character. But when I'm in New York, Sex and the City still has a great resonance there, and also a certain. Usually, it's you know, a certain age group, and usually female will, you know, be they just so identified with that show. Because the show was fantastic, it's incredibly well written, very funny, entertaining, you know, a little edgy. It was a great show.
Can you tell from a person if you're standing in the street and you see someone begin to start approaching you, you see them start to walk towards you? Can you? I don't know if you can answer this. Can you kind of tell whether they're going to talk to you about Twin Peaks?
Kind of. The tattoos usually give it away.
The pie that they're eating normally gives it away.
I was just up in, I went to the Twin Peaks Festival they have up in North Bend every year. And I'd never gone before. So I went this year and met so many nice people. And there were, you know, people, these are super fans, you know what I mean? So they have tattoos of an owl, or they have the chevrons, or even my face in some cases, or Laura Palmer's face. You know, people really, really love the show. And it's so much fun to talk to them and see their enthusiasm and just get a, you know, get a jolt of that energy because, you know, it's just great to see something like that live on.
I loved getting a chance to watch Fallout. I love getting a chance to sort of look through your story for this conversation, just see how many of these, to use the word you mentioned earlier, touchstones that you've been a part of over the years. Kyle, thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on the show.
Thanks, Tom. What a pleasure. Great to speak with you.
It's my conversation with Kyle MacLachlan, who is one of the stars of the brand new sci-fi comedy series Fallout, which is out today on Amazon Prime. Kyle MacLachlan did this thing on TikTok, I don't know if you saw it, where like his face was up next to a bunch of Gen Z terms like iPhone face and unhinged and coded. And he had to say what they meant, what he thought they meant. He didn't do well. I had a little schadenfreude. I was sort of going like, oh, come on, Kyle, get it together. Then some of the Q producers asked me to do it for TikTok. It didn't go much better. So if you want to see that, at CBCQ. On TikTok. It's not unhinged at all. All right, the other conversation we have up today is my conversation with the Juno-winning songwriter, Iskwe, about the, and I'll quote her, gut-wrenching roller coaster ride that led to her new record. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.